The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have Chrissy Freud, a new voice with the Draft Network, NBC Sports Edge. She does really good work breaking down quarterbacks. We're going to do a deep dive into Brock Purdy with the draft now just a couple of weeks away on this Monday. Do some draft talk with Chrissy Freud. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their ongoing support. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He is a captain of the ship if it sinks on him. Had a good weekend. Saw a lot of the Masters, obviously. I saw the Zelensky 60 Minutes report last night. If you've not seen that, man, it is compelling. It was like the Masters was compelling. Went to opening night of the Diamondbacks. Actually kept score in their game Saturday. Watched a lot and listened to a lot yesterday. Long weekend there. And then Dabo Swinney had some comments I thought were really interesting in college football. But let's start with the Masters. This is going to be kind of hard for some, I think. When you see Scottie Scheffler step up to the podium and talk about how he was physically ill yesterday morning, leading at Augusta, coming into the final day, and that his wife was reminding him that you're good, you can do this, and talk to him about his faith. He's a man of strong faith, a man of conviction, which is great. Everybody's got their own ways to get ready to go. And Scottie Scheffler went out yesterday, and he was playing alongside of Cam Smith, and Cam Smith started melting down. Cam Smith started throwing his club, pounding his club, tossed it in the air at one point. And Scottie Scheffler, even on the very first hole yesterday, I'm watching him, and it's just the composure that he had when tough times came to him. And to see how he worked with his caddy and how the caddy is saying to him, trust this shot, trust this shot. I think it was on 11. It was, hey, you hit this shot on 7, do it the same way on 11. There's just a trust factor there that I saw between Scottie Scheffler and his caddy, whereas, you know, when you see when you see Justin Thomas or Tiger Woods, and this isn't besmirching them at all, but those guys are going to do it their way. And so is it having a coach that is right alongside of you, or is it, I am the CEO and I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. Please hand me the club. And that's about it. And that's what I felt like was going on yesterday. You had this circle of the wife in the morning. You had this caddy that it was like a partnership, not a CEO and you're an employee of mine. And I think the caddy makes his 10% and probably he leaves Augusta saying, this is pretty darn cool. Forget about the money for a minute. Just look where I'm at, right? And then Scottie Scheffler laughs a lot. I've noticed that about him. He's got a sense of humor about him. Like, I don't know, his post game yesterday, guys, was just, I don't even really know what to say because I didn't anticipate being in this press room. So go ahead and ask me questions because I don't have anything prepared. And I love that. I love it when there's a little bit of, like, obviously he's got game, okay? Obviously he knows what he's doing on the course with his caddy. The winner yesterday was the Waste Management Open because next year when the WM Open is here, Scottie Scheffler, who won here in Phoenix, is going to be introduced in December when they have the usual luncheon, is the WM Open champion, Masters champion, Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler is like the number one player in the world now, and he wasn't even close to it to start the year. So I thought that Augusta, just sitting there watching Tiger on Thursday and Friday, and as the weekend progressed, you could notice his limp a little bit more. And yet still, here he's out there gaming and battling and trying to fight through it. And anybody rooted against Tiger Woods this weekend, I don't know if you're really a sports fan. Like, it was terrific. It was awesome stuff. There's a note that came out this morning. I just pulled it up on my phone that I wanted to bring to you about the way that Masters works. Augusta, the most prestigious tournament on the PGA Tour, Forbes reported today that the tournament would bring in $18 million less than this year's U.S. Open. The first major of the year expected to generate $142 million in revenue. U.S. Open, third major of the year, expect $160 million. The Masters generates no domestic TV revenue. CBS and ESPN reportedly allow Augusta complete control of the broadcast in exchange for no compensation. Comparatively, the U.S. Open receives $15 million from sponsorship deals. So when I'm sitting there on a Sunday afternoon, and there's very few interruptions, very few commercials, I went over to ESPN Plus and took it in the first few days. I really didn't even need the main announcing team. I just wanted to see the shots. And I found that to be interesting as I was consuming it. So, you know, money left on the table, so what? The later the day went on Sunday, the less interested I was until you had Rory and Morikawa on 18. That is one of those signature moments. And then Cam Smith just losing his mind, just melting down. So, you know, all in all, it was a tremendous, tremendous week. But the takeaway of Scottie Scheffler is the composure and the humbleness and the ability that when things get tough, like he's not the most accurate off the tee. He's not the best putter. If you go look at his numbers, they're all just fine. I think he was 16 in the world before the year started. Look where he is now. A lot of it just goes to that woman alongside of him, that person in his life, and the trust with his caddy, and look where he is. It's just tremendous. The Suns. So I don't really care who it is that they open with. Sorry to burst your balloon if you're like, wow, well, who do you want them to play? I don't care. I don't even care who they play in the second round. You got to just go through it. It's not like, well, I really hope this team wins and that. Boy, we can't face this team. Because here's the thing. When you go out and have a regular season as great as the Suns have had, and you set records, and you're sitting there walking through the playoffs thinking, oh, I can't beat that team in a seven-game series, what are you talking about? So everybody's laid this out as the greatest Suns team ever. But, boy, if we have to play Golden State, I don't think we can win. Really? Really. And so I want to see top-level competition. I don't want to see, like, I felt bad for fans yesterday. It was the regular season finale. There's probably some fans that walked into that game so excited they'd save their money to go see Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton and Chris Paul and Jay Crowder. And guess what? They didn't play. That's not right. And I'm not getting on the player. It's just the way that the league is laid out. When Adam Silver says this last week, our star players need to be on the floor more. This is why. It's really not that hard. Shorten the regular season, start on Christmas Day. The idea of having this play-in tournament, okay, gives you a few more nights of television revenue. That's what it's all about. At the end of the day, it's how many games can we get out of these guys to make the numbers work? So find some other alternatives. You know, the other alternative of this mid-season tournament, okay, it's fine enough. But if you're worried about miles on bodies, I don't look at Golden State and say, well, you know, their regular season record. All that stuff doesn't mean a darn thing now. None of it. None of it. Because guys are being rested. There are teams that are saying, you know, I think we're built to beat this team and that team. But when you have the best record in the NBA, and when you go through the season as they did, I don't think it's, well, we really don't want to play Denver or Utah. We're going to be in trouble. So I'm not going to play that game. I'm just not. The Diamondbacks, so I think they're going to hit eventually. You know, the big question is Caleb Smith, who was batting practice yesterday. Zach Davies on Saturday night, first time through, fine enough. Second time through, wasn't even a challenge. Padres got him out. Zach Davies last year, I heard this on the radio side. Zach Davies last year, opposing hitters, the third time they faced Zach Davies in a game, they hit 400 off him. It's batting practice. So, you know, it's probably a very good thing they're going to get on a plane after they play Houston the next couple of nights and get out of here. Because all they're going to hear is, you guys aren't any good. The wife, the girlfriend, the guys, the buddies are all going to say the same thing. Like, man, are you going to get this figured out? Ketel Marte is going to hit. I don't know if Christian Walker is going to hit consistently. I don't, you know, yesterday afternoon, late game heroics of a home run doesn't mean anything when you're trailing 10 to nothing. You know, so I'm not going to look at the stats. They're a Seth Beer walk-off away from being 0-4. They did find a way to win. Give them credit for that. But there's not much that I could take from the series with the Padres and hang my hat on and say, you know, they're heading in the right direction. You know, the only thing I can say on this one is Brent Strom is going to need time to get the pitching staff turned around. I saw Brent Strom go to the mound on Saturday, and it may have been with Davies, and he was just lighting up whoever, I'm pretty sure it was Davies, just getting into him. And it's going to take time. Brent Strom is a guy that was with Lance McCullers Jr. in Houston. He was with Justin Verlander. He knows what he's doing. He wanted to be closer to his home. So now the Diamondbacks have him. It's not going to get turned around overnight. It's not. And that's why, you know, the Gallen trade, I keep going back to the deals that have been made. Like, you know, you look at the Goldschmidt trade right now and it continues to be a disaster. You look at the Gallen coming here. Got to see something eventually, and he's got to start tomorrow night, and you know it's a big start for him. I, in my opinion, tomorrow night is a huge start. Yeah, they lost 3 of 4. You want to beat Houston, but you know Gallen looked pretty good against Cleveland the other day when he was down at the ballpark. So, you know, for them, it's great to have baseball back. I found myself watching through the weekend, found myself listening through the weekend, but you know this is what we have. The most interesting story of the weekend to me was Dabo Swinney. Dabo Swinney at Clemson talked openly on Friday afternoon about, you know, the game of college football as we know it is no longer going to exist because of what has gone on with name, image, likeness, players being paid, transfer portal. We're less than a year into this. And here's one of the top programs in the nation. And the guy is saying, the coach is saying that the game, the way that it's heading, there'll be 40 schools that will be in a different level of competition. They'll have a commissioner and they'll have a set of rules and we're going to go out and we're going to play. Okay. So let's just look at that on face value. Do you believe that the University of Arizona football program is one of the top 40 programs in the nation? I certainly don't. Is Arizona State sitting on the fence as one of the top 40 football programs in the nation? Well, in the past, maybe, but not where they are right now. Is Washington State one of the top 40? Is Oregon State one of the top 40? So what I'm getting at is Cal, is Colorado, half of the Pac-12, if you're looking at the Dabo Swinney model, and I believe he's right. No, Alabama should not have the same set of rules when it comes to Washington State, Colorado. You can make the argument Arizona State. Sun Devil fans want to hear that, but you know, what have you done? You go to third-tier bowl games most every year. Kansas basketball is really good. Kansas football is not good. So can you say Kansas is one of the top programs? Just go across the country and look at athletic departments and say, okay, if we're going to do this in football, then what happens with basketball? Because clearly the University of Arizona Wildcat basketball program is one of the top in the nation. It is most years. So it should play at the highest level. Arizona State, sitting there in the middle of the pack. Fact, numbers don't lie. Oh, you're beating up on us. No, I'm not. You're mediocre. Try to get to 20 wins. No. Try to get to the NCAA tournament. No, hasn't happened. And so if this is the direction it's going, I do believe it's going to come here sooner than later, where Alabama should not be carrying the water for Vanderbilt or Middle Tennessee State. Or let's go Indiana football. So just go right through all the conferences. And I thought that was a tremendous take on Dabo Swinney's part. And it's not one that I haven't heard before. But when you have a coach at that level come out and say that sort of stuff, you're going to get people that are going to sit up at attention and say, really, this is where it's going? So that was great. Christy Freud is next. Christy, the Draft Network, NBC Sports Edge on Brock Purdy and the other quarterbacks in this year's draft. On a Monday, I'm Brad Sussmad. All right, let's turn our attention to the NFL draft. And as we've been doing a lot about the local kids, focusing in on Brock Purdy and some other quarterbacks for a few minutes, but Christy Freud with the Draft Network, NBC Sports Edge. It's our first time having Christy on board the show. She did a deep dive on Brock. We've seen Brock since his days at Perry High School on Iowa State, and the community very excited. Wanted to have Christy on board talking about the story she did and just her observations of Brock and other quarterbacks. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
It's a great Monday, Christy. Tell me about your background. How did you get to this spot?
Yeah, so I started doing a lot of stuff at USA Today pretty much right out of high school, and then covered the Tennessee Titans. And then the thing about the Titans, though, was there was always like this camp battle for a backup quarterback to beat out Logan Woodside, and they bring in a new guy every year and it wouldn't happen. And then after Marcus Mariota kind of hit a bit of a downfall in Tennessee, there was also talk of them replacing him, which ultimately ended up being Ryan Tannehill. But so anyway, this was a team that was always in the quarterback conversation one way or another. And so I developed this quarterback series and started interviewing quarterbacks, evaluating quarterbacks around college, and eventually kind of just developed something for that, and then got hired on elsewhere to go and cover quarterbacks. So that's kind of the background on that. And I've been specializing in it for, I'd say, the past 3 or 4 years.
That is awesome. That's great. Chrissy Froy, the Draft Network, NBC Sports Edge. Tell me about Brock Purdy, your interview with him. Let's just start there. What were your takeaways?
Yeah, I think that Brock is someone who's underrated. I think that part of that has to do with the questionable decision-making that he did on the field at Iowa State at times. But he did hit some high points. Like I wrote in the story, I think that he has probably some of the best lower body mechanics in this draft, which is a huge deal, because any quarterback trainer will tell you that quarterbacking starts from the ground up. There's a lot of talk about arm angles and what type of release someone has, but really, if the lower body mechanics are not there in the right way, then the quarterback's going to have a really hard time being accurate. And that's something he's been praised for quite a bit. And then the thing that's been the major knock on him that I've kind of done a lot more research on over the past season is this notion that he can't throw the deep ball. And that comes from the fact that the Iowa State offense, you have someone like Breece Hall, who is a star running back, first or second rounder. So the offensive scheme is going to be tailored to him. And in a scheme like that, you don't need a quarterback to throw a lot of deep passes. And so if this happens every year with at least one player, there's a narrative that just because he was not asked to do it at the college level, that he can't do it at the NFL level. But Brock had a 68-yard pass against Oklahoma State. I mean, that's number 8 team in the country. And then he's shown that on film. He showed it at Pro Day, showed it at the Combine, that he can throw the deep ball. And so I think that's been kind of the major knock on him. And then if you can kind of see past that, I think you see someone who could be a 6th or 7th rounder and should be somebody that team takes a chance. A player that a team should take a chance on.
You know, to follow up on your point, Iowa State also threw to their tight ends a bunch. Mm-hmm. And their tight ends, they had a couple of them that were very, very talented. And so I think to your point of the deep ball wasn't really there as Breece Hall was running the ball, as finding those tight ends. And maybe it was just him not being asked to do that, right?
Yeah, that was kind of my takeaway from it. And then it's the same thing, which I thought that he had a decent number of passing attempts in most games. But then the other side of that, too, is there sometimes are some quarterbacks that they'll only be asked to throw the ball about 20 times a game. And then the narrative also develops for them that they're not a good passer, that they're not an adequate passer. So I think if we had put Brock Purdy in a different offensive scheme, maybe where they did have a lot more deep passes, that this narrative wouldn't necessarily be there. And maybe he'd be talked about a little bit more than he currently is being talked about.
I myself think the intangibles are being overlooked with him. And again, I've seen him since high school, so my lens is different. Gotten to know the family quite well. My lens is just different than an NFL GM. Do you see intangibles with him?
Yeah, I think he has strong leadership ability, a lot of resiliency. And I think that he's a quarterback who's also really gotten a lot of flack over the course of his career. And I think that he's bounced back from that well. And I think that he's brought, like I said, just a strong level of leadership to this team and has brought Iowa State to new heights. And it's, like I said earlier, he just doesn't really get enough credit for doing so.
Chrissy Froy, the Draft Network, NBC Sports Edge, with us for a couple of minutes talking quarterbacks. Big picture, your view of the quarterback room in this year's draft. Most people I have on the show say it's not a good year. It's not there's nobody that stands out, so on and so forth. Do you see it exactly the same way, or just got to work a little bit harder at it, guys, to see that there's some people here?
Yeah, I don't necessarily see it that way. I think that this is a class that has a lot of high-end backup potential that people aren't seeing. So I see very few quarterbacks in this class that have a strong it factor. I think that's part of it. But I see a lot of guys that have a good foundation and something to really build upon. And then I think that with a strong foundation like that, there's going to be at least one guy that really hits and pops that no one really expected. Because, I mean, Carson Strong to me is the best pure passer in this class. I think that if he, you kind of saw with Mac Jones, like we have this stereotype that, oh, he's a pocket passer, he can't do well. But if they go to the right place, I'd say Mac Jones is performing currently better than anyone in that class did. And then Desmond Ridder is someone who's been projected everywhere, probably has the best set of foundational traits to build on in this draft. And then the Cincinnati offense didn't really ask him to use his athleticism a lot, but we've kind of realized that's something that he does have. And if he goes in a more, I guess, freewheeling offense, maybe we see him more as an athlete. And so I think that between guys like that, that there's a lot of potential here. And then Kenny Pickett, obviously, I'd say he's at least above average in quite literally every aspect of quarterbacking. So he will at least be a high-end backup.
Go back to our conversation about Brock. Is he one of those guys that you believe is being overlooked coming into this draft?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it has to do with that narrative that's been built around him surrounding the deep ball. And that's kind of what he told me, is it's going to come down to a team giving him a shot in camp and asking him to do it, and him just showing that to somebody in person.
Good stuff. I appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
It's Chrissy Freud, the Draft Network and NBC Sports Edge. And we're back with more after this timeout.